Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have join us Sean McCormick. Sean has been a senior executive at a number of startup companies, as well as larger life science med tech companies. He has over 30 years of financial expertise and operational experience. And most recently, he was the chief financial officer at Aldevron, a private equity-backed CDMO. He has served at a number of companies on their boards, and he's got some great experience and lessons that he's learned in his career. Looking forward to today's conversation with Sean. Can you give us just a little bit of your history, a little bit of your background, and a little bit about your career?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a Minnesota farm boy, grew up in the farm, but knew that wasn't something I wanted to do. So I went to school to become a CPA and came out of college, went to ASU, came out of college and joined Pete Marwick. Really enjoyed it, but I realized something that was missing there. It's kind of like consulting. You're not part of building something. You kind of swoop in for a few weeks and swoop back out. So I started looking to join industry, and I ended up landing a job at Medtronic and spent the next 17 years at Medtronic doing both. Well, I started an internal audit, but then I did corporate reporting roles. And then I went into business units, had some operating roles. And over that 17 years, kind of moved back and forth a little bit between operating roles in the business units and various roles in the corporate headquarters. Great career at Medtronic, great company. And then hit a point where I thought it was time to move on to something different. And I landed my first public company CFO role at EV3. And then I kind of continued. I did a few different public company CFO roles and also a couple of private company COO or CFO roles as well. Moved into to doing board work along the way as well. So I've sat on several public company boards and a couple of different private company boards as well.
One of the questions we like to ask most guests, thinking back over your career, what do you wish you would have known at the age of 22 as you were entering your career? And what advice would you give a 22-year-old Sean?
Yeah, I guess a couple of things, in starting when we're young, we're aggressive, or at least I kind of was, and I like to talk. One of the pieces of advice I was given that I wish I would have known back then was God gave us two ears and one mouth. We should use them in that ratio. And so over time I learned, asking questions and listening gets you a lot farther than just talking and spewing out your opinion, especially as you move into leadership roles. So that's probably the biggest thing. The other thing I would say, as I reflect back on my career, staying humble. And as I look around industry today and I see different, the things that happen with people as they get into positions of leadership or power, and egos get in their way, I think staying humble is extremely important, both from a personal perspective, but also your teams will recognize it. And people become a lot more loyal to leaders who are humble, I believe.
A lot of times people are really successful doing kind of a functional role, and then they get tapped on the shoulder and say, you're really good at this. Now I want you to lead a team. Talk a little bit about just some of the things that you wish you would have known earlier about leadership and leading a team, and maybe thinking about, kind of that first team that you led, and what do you wish you would have done differently?
My first real big team, it was a hard 6 month learning experience. I was used to doing lots of things on my own, as you see, you know, kind of that functional role. I was in mergers and acquisitions. I did lead some analysts, but I went from leading some analysts doing what I knew really, really well to leading a much broader based team in a business unit. You know, everything from analytics to the closing processes to, you know, payables and receivables. And we also did on the sales support side, pricing things. So I was leading a group of folks that were doing things that they were the experts at and I wasn't. And over the course of the first 6 months, working myself, you know, to the bone, I realized I had to figure out a different way to lead people, because I couldn't be into all the details. I couldn't understand everything going on. I couldn't look at all the information on my own. So the learning I had, and I wish there, you know, I've gone through training courses, but more subsequent to that, what I really learned in that time frame was the importance of asking questions, getting to know the people so that I could trust in them, and then just asking the right questions to make sure, you know, that I understood what I needed to understand, and I could trust that they knew all the details so that I could let them do their roles, and I would provide guidance and insight, but not because I knew all the details, but because I was asking good questions and then just having good dialogue with my team. So that was a really, really big learning. And then along the way, I also learned through that dialogue and building a trusting relationship with the team, you kind of learn that there's people that are really good at their function, but they're not necessarily good at being mid-level managers. And so I kind of learned the hard way the importance of being willing to act quickly to get the right people in the right roles, and not allowing somebody into a role just because they were good at what they did at the detail level doesn't always mean they're going to be good at it. You know, that next level up, the manager level. And as a higher level leader of a big team, you can't afford to have people on your team that are creating animosity or frustration or anxieties within the larger group.
So you've been in large global companies, then you moved into more kind of entrepreneurial, and you've been in some startups. What is the difference as you think about the time you spent at Medtronic and then moving into some other companies that probably had limited resources? What was your mindset change that needed to happen in moving into a smaller organization and broader responsibility, but smaller environment?
Yeah, it was interesting. When I left Medtronic and my first role, public company CFO, was EV3, which we sold to Covidien ultimately. When I first got to EV3, I remember sitting in my office at the end of the first week thinking to myself, what have I done? And, you know, by the end of the second week, I was like, no, this is okay. This is actually what I enjoy. This is part of why I left Medtronic. The big adjustment was at that large company, when we had a project or we had a challenge ahead of us, we had it at the time you were in it, it didn't seem like endless resources, but compared to the smaller organization, we had endless resources. And so that was a really big adjustment going back to the smaller organization, but it was also what I had thoroughly enjoyed about my earlier career at Medtronic. And it was, we didn't have all the resources, but it was a tight-knit group of people and we were all in it together, and you didn't have clear lines of this is your role, this is my role, this is, everybody sort of pitched in and did what had to be done. And it took me about a week to realize that was an adjustment back to that environment where the team was all in together, and you don't have clear black and white lines on whose job is what. Everybody pitches in to do what needs to be done, and you actually can move faster because of that.
So you've served on boards over the years. And I think a lot of times we have new CEOs that are listening to this podcast. And I think that's one of the challenges for a new CEO that maybe they've served on boards before, but to work with a board and the relationship. What can you say about that you think would be helpful for a new leader, maybe working with a board for the first time?
Yeah, it's especially for new CEOs, you're moving into a role where you're all of a sudden the buck stops there. Mm-hmm. And so I do see, when I've seen newer folks come onto the board, and I probably was the same way myself, I would guess, is you come into that board role carrying that mentality that, okay, the buck stops here. And I serve on audit committees, and that's largely where I was asked to join, at least my first couple of boards. Was to serve on the audit committee as they were getting ready to go public, and you carry that mentality into that board role, and then you realize no, this isn't the board role isn't about being the decision maker. The board role is much more an advisor, and asking good questions, and again going back to dialogue, but ultimately And there are certain decisions that are the board's decisions, but for the most part, that role is about being an advisor and a sounding board for the lead, for the management team of the company. And you kind of have to step back a bit and say, okay, this isn't my, it isn't one, challenges aren't my challenges necessarily. The challenge is owned by the management team. My role is to help the management team get through that challenge or to manage through that opportunity in a way that we think is going to provide the most benefit and value to the shareholders.
So as you look at as a new leader, you've got board members. Are there times that, I think some of the things I've heard from other board members that serve as chairs is they just don't want to be surprised in the importance of communication. Talk a little bit about that as you've been a senior leader in large organizations, just the importance of communication and keeping your team on the same page, whether it's the board informed or your team, and maybe any examples of that you've seen where maybe people have been surprised and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, that was something that when I got my first real big, when I was promoted to vice president at Medtronic, and I don't know where it came from, quite honestly, but I remember sitting with my staff and say, guys, the only expectation I have is don't let me get surprised. Mm-hmm. I said, good surprises aren't necessarily always bad, but bad surprises are definitely bad. So if there's a problem or an issue or a challenge, come to me even before you have the answers. I'll let you go work on the answers or the solutions, but don't wait until you think you have the solution before you inform me, because I can't get blindsided in not knowing that there's something going on. I've had situations where towards the end of a quarter is the team would be going through, whether it's the inventory analysis or the payables or receive, not so much payables, but receivables analysis. And the team would come in or one of my staff would come in and say, we just found, this issue and it might cost us, you pick a number, you know, a million, 5 million, but a material number, and you're at the end of the quarter, you think you know what your numbers are coming in at, and all of a sudden there's a potential, you know, accounting surprise or a valuation surprise that is going to significantly impact the numbers. You know, and those, when your staff comes in, and this is the importance of how you react and having a trusting relationship. If people think they're going to get screamed at and yelled at because, right, you know, an issue was uncovered, they're going to be reluctant to come in and talk to you about it. But if you have a good, honest, trusting, you know, open communication relationship, those staff members can come in. They come in early. And so we can have a dialogue. It's like, well, okay, what do we think happened? You know, what are we looking into? You know, do we know for certain that this is a problem, or have we gone through all the various analysis to know for certain that it is a problem? To know, do we have to record it now, or is this something that's, you know, an estimate that came up after the quarter? So there's all kinds of things you can talk through, and then the team can go work on it, and you come to the right resolution. And you know, this is another really important aspect of being a leader, is if the right solution is the answer you don't want, that's because it's going to cause you to miss the quarter in the case of numbers, your team has to see that you have the ethics, that you're saying, we're not going to find a way to push this off. This is the right answer, and we're going to record the right answer. And there's plenty of public cases out there where making numbers became more important than doing the right thing. And that, just as a leader, your team will see that. They'll see the ethics, they'll see the morality of you as a leader. And if you bend those rules, you've lost the trust of the team. And so those, I guess, you know, without getting into specifics, those are the types of things that I have encountered, where having a great relationship with the team, them knowing that they could bring a problem to me and we were going to work on it together versus me getting mad and screaming at them, that just yields much better outcomes.
Every leader continues to learn, no matter what stage of career you're at. Any particular books that you think would be helpful to a leader, or ones that you recommend?
Yeah, so I'll be honest, I'm not a big reader. I have read, you know, all the, you know, Good to Great from Jim Collins, you know, great book. A couple of books that I read, you know, over a long term, Halftime by Bob Buford. Mm-hmm. I that was my takeaway from that book. You know, it just really hit home. I read that book probably about, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And the key walkaway for me was, you know, we spend our early part of our career focused on success. Mm-hmm. And then we sort of hit a point in our career where we've reached success, and we kind of go, well, what's next? And it's more about being significant and having an impact than it is about being successful. And that was just something that just really resonated with me when I read through that. Another book that I really liked that I read early in my career, and to this day it still holds true, is Who Says Elephants Can't Dance? Mm. And that was the story about IBM's turnaround, you know, by Lewis Gerstner. And the thing that I took away from that book, that we still use it, I use it to this day, in board meetings especially, is, you know, he talked about when he went into IBM, everybody was giving presentations, but they weren't having dialogues and, you know, good communications. We still, to this day, one of the biggest feedbacks for boards is, we don't want your team to come in and present all the materials that we've already read through. We want to have a dialogue. Hmm. And so that, I think that just holds true, is people put so much time into presentations that they feel like, okay, I want to go through my presentation. Well, the value comes out of the dialogue around the messages of the materials, not walking through the materials themselves. So I still, you know, think that book holds true in terms of just how we approach business communications and presentations. And the other book that I would say, I don't think, you know, we don't talk about it very much in business because it's not politically correct probably, but I have been spending a lot of time, and it takes a while, but I'm reading the Bible cover to cover. Mm-hmm. And you talk about a great history book about how we go through cycles and history repeats itself, and we as society just continue to make the same mistakes over and over, just over a long period of time. And then just the advice on leadership and honesty and integrity. You know, there is a massive amount of wisdom in that book, and you'd set religion aside if you like. There's just a ton of wisdom in the Bible, and I don't think we don't talk about it enough as a great business book. It is a great business book. It's a great life book in terms of you know, just how we should live our lives and how we should behave as individuals. And we talked a little bit earlier about how people's egos can get in the way as they become successful. And I truly believe staying humble is really important, and the Bible can help in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a number of leaders that have that as their, one of their top books on their list. And, definitely, you know, I think for people, they put it in a category and say, well, how does that apply to other areas? So definitely, encourage people, if you haven't, pick up a copy. They're available.
Yes, they are available.
Outside of work, what do you like to do to recharge?
Yeah, I've done a ton of different things. So growing up more rural, we were into cars as kids. So I would, especially in the, I guess, the real crunch time of my career when, you know, you're doing 60, 70, 80 hour weeks, I would love to come home and, you know, throw the car up on jacks and change brakes or whatever, just something completely different. I know, you know, I said I'm not a big reader. I've read so much technical stuff over the years, you know, when I was doing mergers and acquisitions, reading, I just didn't find enjoyment in trying to read a book for the most part, because I was always reading at work. So for me, recharging was doing something different, going back to my roots, whether it was working on a car. I'm in Minnesota right now with my hunting dog. We're doing some pheasant hunting. I've always enjoyed that. I was in Wyoming a few weeks ago, elk hunting. You can see an elk behind me. I got that one a few years ago with my bow. So I love the outdoors. Sometimes, you know, just getting on the lawnmower and spending a couple hours, you know, mowing grass, is kind of a recharge for me. You know, like I said, doing something different, something that's outdoors, because we spend so much time indoors and in the office that, I like to get back to kind of my roots from growing up.
I didn't hear you say shoveling snow or blowing snow, but you're smart. You get out of here when it's
Yeah. Well, interestingly, I do. I don't necessarily like shoveling snow, but it's kind of fun to get in a little tractor and blow it.
Yeah, absolutely. Any parting advice that you would give a newer up and coming leader?
You know, I would say make sure you stay true to yourself. You know, I've had bad advice over the years of, you know, Sean, it's great that you're proud to have grown up on a farm or in rural Minnesota, you know, but you might want to keep that quiet. Cause a lot of people will look at that as, you know, sort of a, you know, make you a hillbilly or something. And I quite honestly, I just, like, my career's progressed. That was just bad advice. I think we don't necessarily have to run around, you know, talking and, you know, advertising how we grew up or who we are, But I think internally you have to stay true to yourself, and don't be ashamed of who you are. And that especially comes to, you know, as you're progressing your career, some other bad advice I've heard people give is, you know, you got to do whatever it takes to get to where you want to go. I disagree with that. Staying true to your personal values, staying true to who you are as an individual, maintaining your morals and ethics is way more important. And part of that might be also, you know, be careful how you define success. I look at some people that have wonderful families. They have a wonderful balance in life. Their kids are doing great. Their marriage is great. That's success. You know, it becoming a CEO isn't necessarily the right definition of success for everybody. So know who you are, know who your values are, stay true to that, and define your success within the confines of who you are.
Yeah, great advice. Well, I sure appreciate you taking some time to talk to us. I know this can be helpful for those listening, and wish you continued success in all you're doing, and enjoy getting out of Minnesota for the January, February months.
Absolutely. So, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.